Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are with yet another medical nutritional update. You know, there's just so many stories that cross my desk that I can't cram them into our weekend program, so lots of important stories would get left on the cutting room floor. So this is an opportunity to catch up on some of the more important nutritional and medical stories of the week that ordinarily might not fit into our tight program format, especially when we get a lot of phone calls. It's been great. We've been getting a lot of phone calls from listeners, and that sometimes pushes out the time allotted for some important stories. So here goes. How would you like to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by 56%? Or another way of saying that is if you're 65 years or older, how about gaining years of life and years free of cardiovascular disease, additional 9.5 years of life, and an additional 6.3 years free of cardiovascular disease? Well, that sounds pretty appealing, doesn't it? You know, if there was a pill, we would market it. It would be fast-tracked, approved by the FDA, and it would make billions for its pharmaceutical manufacturer. Okay, well, the intervention in question is the Mediterranean diet. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Mediterranean diet, and also with a special view to the benefits of olive oil, one of my favorite dietary components, and also happens to be one of our sponsors. We are big believers in extra virgin olive oil, rich in beneficial polyphenols. Okay, so I've got an article here, actually a couple of articles, from this month's edition of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, America's most definitive nutrition journal. And the title of the first article is "The Protective Effect of Homovanillyl Alcohol." What in the heck is that? I read that and I said, what the heck is homovanillyl alcohol? That sounds like vanilla. Well, it has nothing to do with vanilla. That's just a chemical name for something that is better known as hydroxytyrosol. Hydroxytyrosol, it says, offers a protective effect on cardiovascular disease and total mortality. And where do you find hydroxytyrosol? Well, namely, in two components of the Mediterranean diet, which are extra virgin olive oil and red wine. They say here that hydroxytyrosol is a polyphenol present in the traditional Mediterranean diet as a component of olive oil and wine. And this is actually the first study of its kind that evaluated levels of hydroxytyrosol that are measured in the urine. And it's a pretty good way of measuring adherence to the Mediterranean diet, right? Because you can sometimes, they say, you put people on a group, in a group, and you say, well, eat this diet, and you're not really sure if they do. But one way of checking out if they really are adhering is to measure components, healthy components of the diet, as they come out in the urine. So that's what they did. And this is a first-of-its-kind study. They say, we report for the first time to our knowledge an independent association between high urinary hydroxytyrosol concentrations and a lower risk of cardiovascular disease and total mortality in elderly individuals. Okay? The association that they found reinforces the benefits of two key components of the Mediterranean diet, which are wine and extra virgin olive oil. So what is going on here? Well, hydroxytyrosol is a protective compound. Polyphenols from extra virgin olive oil have been shown to decrease the expression of atherosclerosis-related genes. There is benefits in terms of decreasing heart rate, blood pressure, LDL oxidation, inflammation, the tendency of the blood to clot, size of lipoprotein particles, the small being bad, the large fluffy particles being good. There are benefits in terms of increasing HDL cholesterol. There's benefits in terms of what's called endothelial function. And so there's a whole lot going on here when we supply the body with adequate amounts of hydroxytyrosol from the diet. So a very cool study that suggests, hey, that's an easy way to fight cardiovascular disease and also to extend life. And the next study, which is kind of like the companion study to this particular thing on hydroxytyrosol, it's entitled "A Mediterranean Diet Lowers Blood Pressure and Improves Endothelial Function." This is from a study in Australia where they put 166 men and women who were older, over 64, to either consume a Mediterranean diet or their usual diet, which is kind of a crappy diet, right? The average Australian diet, not much better than the SAD, the standard American diet. So they made them follow the diet for 6 months. And what they found was that there was an improvement in systolic blood pressure, and there was also an improvement in what's called endothelial function. So endothelium, the endothelium is the lining of the arteries. And when they say you have stiff arteries, that means that your endothelium isn't functioning properly. There's lack of stretchiness and elasticity in the arteries. You get hardening of the arteries. That's, you know, what's an old-fashioned expression, which means poor endothelial function. So they say here that they put these people on the Mediterranean diet, and the principal components of which include vegetables, fresh fruit, fish and seafood, legumes, nuts, extra virgin olive oil, plenty of it, and red wine. They say the diet is relatively low in junk foods and sugary foods and sugary and high-calorie desserts and fried foods. It's got some red meat. It's moderate in dairy foods, which include mostly cheese and yogurt, which themselves may have benefits. The probiotics in yogurt, the vitamin K from cheese may have protective effects, and that cheese is part of the Mediterranean diet. So they say that many studies have shown that the Mediterranean diet can help via maintenance of blood pressure and endothelial function. The consumption of a diet that's high in fruit, vegetables, nuts, and unsaturated oils like omega-3 and low in sodium can lower blood pressure. And also, there's some things in the Mediterranean diet that have been shown to improve endothelial function. So in this study, they measured blood pressure, but they also measured endothelial function. And they do that via a test called FMD, flow-mediated dilation. They check to see whether the blood vessels can expand and contract properly. And what they found was that there was a 1% higher, actually a 1.3% higher flow-mediated dilation that was measured in the study. And I might say, well, that's a 1% increase. That's not very much. But actually, it's pretty significant because it's been estimated that a 1% increase in flow-mediated dilation can be associated with a 13% lower risk of a cardiovascular event after a follow-up of 3 years. So this change in diet caused the blood vessels to actually respond better. So the explanation of why there was a benefit, they say the mechanisms by which endothelial function is improved after consumption of a Mediterranean diet are thought to be related to its favorable fatty acid profile, namely high in omega-3s, and a high antioxidant content, and also a higher proportion of monounsaturated fatty acids, which come from olive oil, reduce the susceptibility of cholesterol molecules to oxidation. One of the things that we measure in my practice when we try to assess cardiovascular risk, we don't just measure cholesterol and LDL. We subfractionate and slice and dice the LDL to see how much of it is oxidized, because oxidized LDL is very atherogenic, even more dangerous. So by using olive oil, we can cut down on the oxidation of the LDL, creating bad, more dangerous LDL. They say here too that antioxidants may, and that the antioxidants come not just from olive oil, but also from the fresh fruits and vegetables. Antioxidants may inhibit the free radical damage that can initiate and progress atherosclerosis, thereby resulting in a progressive loss of endothelial function. They also say that, their results suggest that the nitric oxide availability can be improved in older adults with a med diet. Well, that's pretty cool, because that's the Viagra principle, and that which dilates your coronary arteries and your cerebral arteries can also dilate some other pretty important arteries a little further south that might play a role in your sexual functioning. So, you know, we talk about nitric oxide. Mediterranean diet seems to enhance nitric oxide. So they say in conclusion, healthy Australian adults, and by the way, these people probably were on not the greatest diet for the vast majority of their lives, and yet with just a six-month intervention, they had reduced systolic blood pressure after just 3 months, even greater to a greater extent after 6 months of sticking to the diet, and improved endothelial function. So that's very cool. All right, more on olive oil, and this is brand new. It comes to us from Virginia Tech just a couple weeks ago in September. Health benefits of olives and olive oil. A research team has discovered that the olive-derived compound oleoropein helps prevent type 2 diabetes. That's really cool, because the type of olive leaf extract that we use is guaranteed high in oleoropein. It's like 18 or 20% oleoropein, which is a very high percentage of oleoropein, the highest that we can obtain when we make olive leaf extract. The company that makes it for us is called Da Vinci. And it is 18 to 20%. It's standardized 18 to 20%. So the Virginia Tech research team discovered that the olive-derived compound oleoropein helps the body secrete more insulin, which, of course, is the central signaling molecule in the body that controls blood sugar and regulates it. So the Virginia Tech research team discovered that the olive-derived compound oleoropein can promote secretion of insulin, which helps the body cope with sugar and dispose of it and properly metabolize it. And that may be why olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, as part of a Mediterranean diet, is associated with a lower incidence of insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, and type 2 diabetes. So they say, guess what? They're going to try and make this into a drug. Next steps include testing the compound in a diabetic animal model. Pretty soon, you'll be able to buy oleoropein as a prescription drug. Well, meanwhile, take it as a nutritional supplement. Olive leaf extract provides it. And so too just does extra virgin olive oil. And this one, from a little earlier this year, I'll just review it because it's very important. It shows that extra virgin olive oil preserves memory and protects the brain against Alzheimer's. They say that the Mediterranean diet has been known to be associated with a variety of health benefits, including a lower incidence of dementia, and now researchers have identified a specific ingredient that protects against cognitive decline. It's extra virgin olive oil. And what's in it specifically that seems to make a difference? Well, there are compounds in extra virgin olive oil beneficial polyphenols that prevent degenerative changes in the brain. So researchers looked at animals, experimental animals, divided into two groups. One received a diet enriched with extra virgin olive oil, and one received regular diet without it. And these were mice. And this is in an animal model of mice that are highly prone to Alzheimer's disease. And what they found was that at age 9 and at age 12 months, because mice don't live very long, mice on the extra virgin olive oil enriched diet performed significantly better on tests designed to evaluate working memory, spatial memory, and learning abilities. And then they, animal lovers, sorry to say, they autopsied these mice, and studies of brain tissue from both groups of mice revealed a dramatic difference in nerve cell appearance and function. The author of the study says, quote, "One thing that stood out immediately was synaptic integrity." Synaptic integrity. That means the connections between the neurons, known as synapses, were preserved in animals on the extra virgin olive oil diet. And in addition, compared to mice on a regular diet, brain cells from animals in the olive oil group showed a dramatic increase in the ability to clean up amyloid plaque and the tangles that are associated with the appearance of Alzheimer's disease in both humans and animals. So very cool studies suggesting the benefit of the Mediterranean diet. And hey, I called it back in the late 80s and early 90s. We began to talk about the salmon and salad diet. Well, what is that other than a diet very similar to Mediterranean diet? Natural foods, lower in sugars and salt, processed foods. It does include whole grains, although some people react poorly to grains, and in particular gluten. Red wine, permitted. Lots and lots of extra virgin olive oil. Lots of nuts. Legumes, permitted. Plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. And a little red wine added to the mix doesn't hurt. So there you have it. Just lots and lots of exciting news about the Mediterranean diet and its protective effects, in particular, the benefits of extra virgin olive oil. Okay, some bad news on the net effects of food stamps, also known now as the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, SNAP. The whole idea behind this, and you know, food stamps have been around for a long time, as long as I can remember as an adult. The idea being is that there was hunger in America, and that people couldn't afford to buy food, and that this was literally a hedge against starvation. Children in households where sometimes single-family households where mom was unemployed, the kids literally went hungry, didn't get enough food. And another rationale for the SNAP program is that even if there's enough money to fend off starvation, good food is expensive. You know, food that, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables tend to be pricey. And so families faced with stringent economic circumstances tend to buy food that just packs a punch calorically just to stay ahead of the curve and not starve. It's not a lot of money to buy extra virgin olive oil, not a lot of money to buy arugula, not a lot of money to buy avocados. Have you seen the price of avocados? Salmon, you know, sky-high prices in urban areas, unless you live in Seattle or Vancouver. So the rationale for the program was to make Americans healthier. Okay? Now, unfortunately, this is not the case. And there's an article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition this month, which analyzes the nutritional profile of SNAP household food and beverage purchases. And I looked at this headline, I said, okay, this finally answers the question, what are people doing with their food stamps? Are they making intelligent choices? And is it bettering the lot of poor Americans? And the answer is, unfortunately, no. A little background on this. The SNAP program is the largest federal nutrition assistance program in the United States. It serves nearly one of seven Americans. They say, to date, few studies have examined food and beverage purchase behaviors in SNAP participants with the use of electronic purchase data. So, you know, with now, you got, they track you. They know what you buy. And they can do it in stores. And so each SNAP purchase goes into a big data repository, and then they collect it from the supermarkets, and they see what people are buying. Same thing for ordinary folks who are not on SNAP. And so they were able to do this big study. And there actually have been intimations of this, is that we do see a real disparity between the haves and the have-nots. It used to be, and this, you go back to recruiting for World War I, and even World War II. One of the big problems was that a lot of recruits were underweight. They actually had to fatten them up. They were farm boys and coal miners and workers from Appalachia and from the Midwest. And many of these young men were underweight. They did not meet the weight requirements to be able to carry a Browning automatic rifle or an M1, and they were weak and debilitated. So one of the tasks of the armed forces was to put on the feed bag and physically train these guys. So they put on a little bit of muscle and put on a little bit of weight. Many were rejected because they were underweight. Now, the problem is the opposite. And, you know, a lot of military recruits, you know, unfortunately, it's an economic opportunity for people who are poor, but many of them are overweight, and they're disqualified for the opposite reason in 2017. So we're beginning to see the script being flipped on income disparity. People who are underprivileged and in relative economic straits tend to be heavier than the people who are wealthy and well off. All right, so coming back to this article, what they found is that, first of all, bad news, regardless of SNAP status, and they compared three types of situations. One was higher income individuals who were well off, not necessarily rich, but, you know, sufficient. And they also compared to SNAP recipients, people who are eligible for SNAP but didn't sign up for SNAP. And that's important because that means that these people were relatively poor, of low economic status, but they just hadn't signed up for SNAP. So they weren't getting the additional food benefits, food purchase benefits. But they found that all three groups, the well-off, the SNAP recipients, and the equivalent low-income individuals without SNAP, they all had low average purchases of fruits, vegetables, and fiber, and high average purchases of junk food, saturated fat, and sodium. So that's the bad news, first of all, is that nobody was eating really well in this cohort. However, the researchers say, we found significant differences by SNAP status of purchases of fruit, processed meat, salty snacks, sweeteners, and toppings, sugar-sweetened beverages, and total calories, fiber, sugar, and sodium. And they weren't good, these associations, these differences. Several of these differences, they say, were important. For example, compared with income-eligible, in other words, poor individuals who weren't on SNAP, and higher-income non-participants, SNAP participants purchased an additional 15 to 20 calories per day per person from sugar-sweetened beverages, which, by the way, are covered by SNAP. They're, you know, we'll get to that controversy in just a moment, but this is America's largest federal nutrition assistance program, but it's a federal nutrition assistance program without rules. So you get the WIC program, which is supposed to, Women, Infants, and Children program, which is supposed to assist poor or disadvantaged women with small children. And there are rules. The Army is a federal nutrition program, and they've got standards. So there are many, many programs administered by the government, and they've got standards. So you can have, yes, you can have this. No, you can't have that. You can't buy a six-pack of Coke. What they're saying here, this big complicated analysis shows several things. For several food groups, non-participating households that weren't on SNAP, they purchased higher amounts of healthful foods and lower amounts of unhealthful foods than did SNAP participating households. They didn't have the extra coupons or card, because now it's a card, electronic card. So when they went to the cash register, they didn't buy extra junk. Income-eligible, non-participating households purchased significantly greater calories from fruit, which is good, than SNAP households did. So did higher-income participants. They bought more fruit. So the SNAP people with the card and with the advantage, free pass, they didn't buy the good stuff. Income-eligible, non-participants purchased fewer calories from processed meat and from sweeteners and toppings than did SNAP participants. Similar results were seen also for high-income non-participants who purchased fewer calories from processed meats and from sweeteners and toppings than did current SNAP participants. So, yeah, you're well off and maybe better educated, so you just don't buy that junk. Higher-income non-participants purchased slightly more calories from non-starchy vegetables. That's good. Non-starchy vegetables, green leafy vegetables, than did current SNAP participants. And conversely, they purchased fewer calories from starchy vegetables. The SNAP participants maybe bought more potatoes and corn, sweet potatoes, yams that were starchy and caloric. So income-eligible non-participants purchased significantly fewer calories from sugar-sweetened beverages than did current SNAP participants. So all that credit went to unhealthy foods. And both income-eligible and higher-income non-participating households, in other words, the non-SNAP recipients, purchased considerably fewer total calories than did current SNAP participants. And finally, income-eligible non-participant households, in other words, poor people without SNAP, purchased more fiber than did SNAP households. So this really comes down to, should we be regulating SNAP? And look, a lot of people say, no, we shouldn't discriminate against these poor people. And, I think that argument is a tired argument. Also, there's evidence that that argument is being buttressed by the food and beverage industry that doesn't want any restrictions placed on this government giveaway program. And yes, we should extend benefits to disadvantaged individuals, but we should place some markers on what's acceptable as part of a supplemental food program, because it's supposed to be a supplemental food program. It's not supposed to be, a feed bag, smorgasbord, buy anything you like program. And I think it's high time that we do that. And it's in the interest of these people, and it's in the interest of our country, which, to the extent that these people are poor and disadvantaged, creates a tremendous toll in terms of our healthcare expenditures, largely subsidized by state, local, and federal government. And so we got to turn this ship around, because it ain't working out as it was intended. Sorry to say. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part one of our two-part weekly medical nutritional update. So join us for part two as we continue.